Before the feast of Passover, Jesus knew that his hour had come to pass from this world to the Father. He loved his own in the world, and he loved them to the end. The devil had already induced Judas, son of Simon the Iscariot, to hand him over. So during supper, fully aware that the Father had put everything into his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God, he rose from supper and took off his outer garments. He took a towel and tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and dry them with the towel around his waist. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Master, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered and said to him, "What I am doing, you do not understand now, but you will understand later." Peter said to him, "You will never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "Unless I wash you, you will have no inheritance with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Master, then not only my feet, but my hands and head as well." Jesus said to him, "Whoever has bathed has no need except to have his feet washed, for he is clean all over. So you are clean, but not all." For he knew who would betray him. For this reason he said, "Not all of you are clean." So when he had washed their feet and put his garments back on and reclined at table again, he said to them, "Do you realize what I have done for you? You call me teacher and master, and rightly so, for indeed I am. If I, therefore, the master and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash one another's feet. I have given you a model to follow, so that as I have done, you should also do." The Gospel of the Lord.
Holy Thursday is actually kind of like a feast day for priests. I always have found it as a priest, it's an interesting way to begin the Triduum, because we're entering into, you know, the Lord's Passion, but we start off with a day that, at least for us, is very celebratory. And the reason that we kind of observe this like a feast day, and every year Father Steve and I have lamb for dinner on Holy Thursday, the reason we observe this as a feast day is because on Holy Thursday, we enter into the celebration of the Lord's Supper, the Last Supper. And at the Last Supper, Jesus instituted the Eucharist when he gave the bread and wine to his disciples and said, "This is my body, this is the chalice of my blood. Do this in memory of me." He instituted the sacrament of the Eucharist. And in so doing, he also instituted the priesthood. So this really is a feast that, in particular, we celebrate the Eucharist, and we celebrate the priesthood. What the church asks us to preach about today is three things then: the institution of the Eucharist, the institution of the priesthood, and the command to service, which Jesus gives an example of in washing the disciples' feet. Now, that's quite a lot to try to fit into a homily. And even the Eucharist and the priesthood themselves are really massive topics. So what I would like to do is kind of focus in tonight on specific aspects of the Eucharist and of the priesthood. Right, and the Eucharist, for instance, traditionally we would speak about the Eucharist in two ways. Right, this is how I teach it in my class. Right, I spent a month talking about Eucharist as a sacrament. The church says, as a sacrament, it is given to us, we receive it, and is ordered towards our sanctification. As a sacrifice, it is offered to the Father for his glorification. And the Eucharist is both, right? I would like to talk about the second part tonight. I would like to talk about the Eucharist as a sacrifice, frankly, because I think we sometimes don't talk about that enough, right? I have noticed that as I was taught the faith, but then also in the years I spent teaching the faith, when we talk about the Eucharist, we talk a lot about Jesus' real presence in the Blessed Sacrament and the great gift it is for us to be able to receive him. That's a good, beautiful, worthy thing to talk about. I find that we don't often speak, or not as often, speak about the holy sacrifice of the Mass, which is also the Eucharist, and what we're doing here. Now, the specific aspect of the priesthood that I would like to talk about tonight is what we call the common priesthood of the faithful. So, I don't know how long it's been since you studied your catechism. So, you're all priests. I don't know if you know that. Well, if you're baptized, you're a priest. The Church has always taught that by our baptism, we enter into the priesthood of Jesus Christ. Actually, we become priests, prophets, and kings, because Jesus is priest, prophet, and king. And when we become members of his body, we have a participation in his offices of priest, prophet, and king. So all of us who have been baptized, we are priests. And this is what we call, or the Church calls, the common priesthood of the faithful. Now, I think that's an important thing. If we want to understand what a priest, a ministerial priest, what we usually call a priest, like me and Father Steve, and what we usually call a ministerial priest, that kind of priesthood, the Church says, is at the service of the common priesthood of the faithful. Now, what that means is that we are ordained, configured to Christ the head. Our relationship to the body of Christ is, in a sense, changed. But our ministry and our being configured to Christ the head is ordered towards all of you being able to exercise your priesthood as the faithful, as the baptized people of God, the body of Christ. So if we're going to understand what that means, what it means that you're a priest, and how are you going to exercise your priesthood, I think we have to actually start with the priesthood of Jesus Christ. Because all of us, whether by baptism or by ordination, all of us carry out priestly ministry as a share in Christ's priesthood. He is the priest. He's the high priest. Every single one of us shares in his priesthood. So if we want to understand what it means for you to be a priest, which is necessary for me to understand what it means for me to be a priest, then we first have to ask what it means for Jesus to be a priest. And we know that pretty much every religion in the history of humanity has a priesthood, right? And the priesthood are those people who have been set aside, sort of made sacred, so that they can be kind of go-betweens between God and the people, right? So in various ways in various religions, the priests sometimes exercise a prophecy, sometimes speak to the people on behalf of God. But the most basic form of priesthood in human experience is the priests are those set aside to offer sacrifices to God on behalf of the people. And God himself, in revealing himself to his people, Israel, and in establishing a covenant with them, he established a priesthood. And now we want to understand this priesthood is already something above all the other priesthoods that human religions have kind of come up with, because this priesthood was established by God himself, right? God chose his priests. He said, I'm going to make Israel a priestly people, right? They're going to live basically as a sacrifice to me. They're going to be sacred from the world and be kind of a witness to the rest of the world of me. And then from the people of Israel, he chose the tribe of Levi, and they would be the representatives of the rest of Israel in offering the sacrifices. We call Jesus a priest. We call him the true priest, the high priest, because Jesus is, in an even deeper and more real way, a priest, even than the Israelite or the Levites of Israel. The reason is, this is very important, the church fathers have kind of looked and said, well, there was something that really came up short about the priesthood of the Old Testament. And that's this. The priests offered sacrifices, but the sacrifices were not themselves. They were merely representative. Right, and no matter how many bulls we slaughter or how much incense we burn, it cannot be the same thing as us offering ourselves to God. And what does God really need with our burnt offerings and with our slaughtered calves, right? What he really wants is us. What he really wants is for us to offer ourselves to him. So Jesus really fulfills the priesthood, because when he comes as priest, the sacrifice that he offers is not something else. There's no representative sacrifice. Jesus actually offers himself. That's the kind of priest Jesus is. He is the priest offering the sacrifice, and he is the victim. He is the sacrifice offered. Jesus offers himself to who? First of all, to the Father. And then also, in offering himself to the Father, he offers himself to us. So he offers himself as a gift. He holds nothing back, right? You can't look at the crucifix right now, but you know, just imagine the visual of Jesus' death on the cross, stretched out, naked, bleeding, giving himself over completely, holding nothing back. This is the sacrifice that Jesus offers. Now, I have lamented over the years because there is actually so much in the passion of our Lord that we kind of pass over as a church. Because if you think about it, we only read the passion twice a year. And that's Palm Sunday. We did it this a few days ago. And we'll read the passion tomorrow at the Good Friday liturgy. We don't really liturgically read the passion any other times. And so because of that, you know, think back to what we heard on Sunday, or if you're coming tomorrow, listen to what we hear on tomorrow. There is a lot that happens in the passion of Jesus Christ, and we just can't talk about it all, right? So we have things to talk about on Holy Thursday. We have things to talk about on Good Friday, and then voila, it's Easter Sunday. So two of, for me, my favorite aspects of the Lord's passion are things we don't get to speak about that much. And one is the agony in the garden. One of my students recently told me that they have a particular devotion to the agony of the garden, and I felt like this truly is my spiritual child, right? I really love to meditate and enter into the agony of the garden, and then also Holy Saturday, right? Jesus being dead in the tomb. I just want to make a little reference. This is kind of cheating because this is not part of the Holy Thursday liturgy, but I want to make a little reference to the agony in the garden. And by the way, we live out Jesus' prayer in the garden after the Holy Thursday liturgy. So you might remember that we will process out of here with the Blessed Sacrament and go to a place and kind of keep watch with Jesus, keep vigil. And that's because after the Last Supper was over, they went out and processed into the Garden of Gethsemane. And this is where Jesus enters into his passion. And I often think that, think about the prayer that Jesus went through. Think about he was so agonized that he's sweating blood and he's beginning to experience the loneliness and the sense of isolation and even abandonment, right? And he's kind of entering into the sinfulness of humanity. He's so distraught by this that he's sweating blood. And we hear him pray to the Father, right? We hear him cry out, Father, if it be your will, let this cup pass me by. Or let this cup pass over me. But not my will, but yours be done. And I often think that what's accomplished externally on Good Friday, we actually see Thursday night in the agony garden. We see the spiritual side. We see the interior side of that sacrifice accomplished in the agony in the garden. Right? The whole of humanity, since our first parents fell, since our first parents committed the sin of disobedience, the whole of humanity has experienced essentially strife with God because we were given this beautiful gift of free will, but so often we don't want to be obedient to God's will. We want to contend with God's will, especially when God's will calls us to suffer, or especially when God's will calls us to do things that are difficult or painful, or ask us to give up things that we don't want to give up or do things that we don't want to do. What we see happen with Jesus is he enters into that struggle, but for the first time really in human history, he wins that battle. And we see part of his sacrifice is the sacrifice of complete obedience to the Father. One of the things I really love about the meditating on the Garden of Gethsemane is we see Jesus doesn't want to die. This is actually agonizing what he is about to enter into. But he wins this victory because he completely abandons himself to the Father's will, right? I'm going to ask you for this, Father, but ultimately not my will, but yours be done. This is a great priestly gesture of Jesus. This belongs in our meditation of his sacrifice, his giving himself over on the cross. So, what does this have to do with the Eucharist and the common priesthood of the faithful? Well, when we celebrate the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, and the Holy Sacrifice really is important, right? Have you ever thought about why we have Mass every Sunday and we don't just have communion services where we can all, hear the word and receive communion? No, the offering of the Holy Sacrifice is really important. What happens here at the altar is really important. And that's because through the Eucharist, we enter into the sacrifice that Jesus offers on the cross. It's mystical, it's a mystery, it requires faith, but in our celebration of the Eucharist, we actually become contemporary with Christ offering himself on the cross. This, believe it or not, is actually what we are doing when we come to Mass. I have had a really powerful experience with this year, by the way, because, many of you know, and maybe many of you have experienced, Father Steve, I'm very grateful to you for this. At one of our Sunday Masses, we've begun celebrating Mass we call Ad Orientem, which is where the priest and the people face the same direction. And one of the things that's so beautiful and so powerful about this gesture is it really highlights the fact that the person we're speaking to when we offer the Holy Sacrifice is the Father. And that all of us are offering the Holy Sacrifice. That all of us are entering into what Jesus does on the cross, and that he invites us to enter into his sacrifice of himself. He unites himself to us in the Blessed Sacrament, but so doing, invites us to enter into his living for the Father, his being totally obedient, his handing himself over completely to the Father. And this, through our participation in the Eucharist, is what he wants to accomplish in us. So we have ministerial priests who, you know, by our ordination, this is kind of fancy terminology, but by our ordination, we've been reconfigured to Christ the head so that we can act in the person of Christ so he can make himself present on the altar. But the real priest acting in every single Mass is Jesus Christ, the high priest. He's really the one that's offering himself to the Father, but he invites all of us to enter into that offering. And by the way, this is not really a theological data point, it's just kind of personal testimony. I have such a powerful experience celebrating Mass that way here because you would think maybe that when I'm facing you that I'm more aware of your presence, and that is actually, I have not found that to be true. There is something that happens to me when I climb these steps and I really feel the fact that I'm going forth at the head of this community and offering the sacrifice on behalf of this community, or rather this community is offering the sacrifice through me. So this is actually the priestly function that all of us are fulfilling, or that all of us are trying to enter into when we come and we celebrate the holy sacrifice of the Mass. And really what we should be wanting to be accomplished in us and what Jesus is trying to accomplish in us is he wants to draw us into his being completely for the Father and being made more perfectly obedient and more perfectly open to the Father's will. Here's a little bit of a practical advice on entering more deeply into Mass. This may not sound real, by the way, because it's something that happens in our hearts and in our heads, but if you think about it, we're spiritual and physical beings. Our spiritual powers are the intellect and the will. So all the spiritual stuff that happens in us is thought and volition, right? What we think and what we will. That's the spiritual part of us. So I started doing this about 2 years ago, and I will tell you, this is testimony, I can't prove it, but it has changed my life. I, as the priest, when I go up there and I'm going through the offertory prayers, right, where the music is playing and the priest is saying prayers under his breath, preparing the gifts to be offered, I have actually really tried to make an intentional, conscious act of the will to place my life, myself, my priesthood, everything that I have on this altar and say, Lord, take it all. And the things that I'm really struggling with, or the things that I really desire and want, right, or the things that are really painful to me, I try to give it all to him. And in that moment, I try to call to mind everything that I need, all my intentions, and place it up on the altar. But also, I have to do this within the context of saying, not my will, but yours be done. Lord, I want these things. I'm asking for these things. I need these things. My people need these things. I place this in all of myself on this altar, but I also know that that you're in charge here. Not my will, but yours be done, and just give me the grace to live more fully for you. Now, all that is just happening in my mind while I'm doing other things and saying other prayers, but I will tell you, brothers and sisters, that in the last 2 years has changed my life, and it has changed my priesthood. It's changed the way that I live as a Christian. It's changed the way I pray. Because the Lord takes those acts of the will seriously. The Lord takes those prayers seriously. And so if you start doing that tonight, saying, I'm going to make this really, again, it might not feel like you're doing anything. But if you keep doing it over and over and over again, I think what you'll see is the Lord will take your acts of the intellect, your acts of the will seriously, and he'll begin to give you what you ask. And he'll begin to take from you what you're offering. And he will begin to actually conform you more to his will, which is exactly what we're here trying to do. Right? One more thing. I'm almost done, I promise. Thinking about the priesthood in the last couple days, I thought about the sign value of priestly celibacy, right? The fact that in the Western church, with some exceptions, the church asks priests to live a celibate life, to renounce marriage for the sake of the kingdom. And I've been thinking about this in the light of what we've been speaking about of offering ourselves more fully as a living sacrifice to God. And I have to tell you, I get really frustrated when I hear the question brought up, why are priests celibate? When the answer that it's given is so that they have more time to do ministry, I hate that answer. Hopefully it's true that we have more time to do ministry because of are being celibate. Hopefully it's true that we're freer to go where the people of God need us to go. But I can tell you, and anybody who's lived the priesthood for any amount of time, I think would probably be able to confirm what I'm saying. If the only reason that I'm living the life that I am is so that I can have more time to like go to people's houses or something, it's not worth it. And that's not really the meaning and the value of celibacy. The priest is called to a celibate life because it's a more perfect following of that total self-abandonment of Jesus. I say Jesus is the one who lives completely for the Father, and then in living for the Father, he lives completely for us. And the priest is called to more perfectly imitate that reality, to essentially live towards God as much as possible. And any priest who is reflective about this will tell you, all that extra time we have because we don't have a wife and children, if we don't seek deep intimacy with the Lord, then not only do we have nothing to offer you, but we have no real substance to our life, and things get really dark then, right? Kind of on the same line, but in a different vocation, I was really struck tonight. And I'm putting him and I'm putting his wife on the spot. Deacon Shavir was over at the house before Mass, and he said, I'm going to butcher the story because I only heard it once, but he was talking about his wedding day, and he said his wife, Maria, who at that moment was not his wife yet, when she processed into her wedding, the song that she processed into was not like Here Comes the Bride. It was Spanish, and it was something to the effect of God first, then you. Is that more or less the idea? That's a beautiful thing. But what Deacon Shavir said next was what really struck me. He said, that's why we're still married. Because we knew on our wedding day that really what all of us have to seek first is God. I was really struck by what he said, because when we seek God first and last and always, what actually always happens is we begin to live for others. When we really serve the Lord, right, we become open to others. Right? Deacon Shavir is exactly right. It's because they seek God first that they actually are able to love each other. And it's if the priest is really seeking deeper intimacy with the Lord, if he's using this gift of celibacy to pray and to really try to come to know Jesus so that he can introduce his people to Jesus, that very living for the Lord is going to be the thing that makes him live more for you. The value of celibacy as a sign to the world is it's so that everybody else can look at the celibate who's really living for the Lord and see in it a sign, a glimpse, an image of what really the spiritual life is about for all of us. Now, when I started forming this homily, I wanted to give a vocations homily because we need a lot more priests. I really think St. Thomas should be producing a lot more priests. I really think there should be like six future priests in the congregation tonight. I really do believe that. But I decided a vocation homily wasn't kind of fitting for the solemnity of Holy Thursday. But I will end by saying this. I think that if we seek to enter more deeply into our prayer of the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, if we can be more intentional about trying to enter into Jesus' offering of himself and to offer ourselves and to ask Jesus to make us more like him and to ask Jesus to make us live more for the Father, right? That's going to reorder our lives. And maybe that's part of the solution to the vocation crisis. Maybe that's part of the solution to having priestly vocations, because when we order our lives and we teach our children to order their lives towards total abandonment, total loving obedience to the Father, then what we see is to be called to serve in any celibate vocation, but tonight specifically, to be called the servant of the priesthood is actually just a deepening and going further of the life that we're all trying to live now anyway, rather than being something that's completely radically different from the way we live our lives, and therefore unthinkable.